With SDPB News, I'm Megan Feary. Governor Kristi Noem met with state penitentiary workers for an hour on Friday afternoon. A recent whistleblower complaint raised a number of issues, and Noem says the preliminary investigation backed up some of those concerns. SDPB's Ariel Zients has more.
Governor Kristi Noem says changes are already in place at the state penitentiary after four leaders were fired or put on leave.
I think the employees today are much more comfortable sharing information with us based on those changes. Before, they were concerned that they would be punished for speaking out. And now we had a very candid conversation in the other room.
Noem says the workers' concerns include pay, staffing, and safety. They also say nepotism and mandatory overtime are demoralizing. The governor says she can't discuss specific details because of the ongoing investigation. Also because some issues relate to personnel matters. Noem says some of the state's $85.9 million surplus can pay for equipment, training, and bonuses, but more permanent funding will be needed for raises. The governor wants state lawmakers to start thinking about funding for raises, but she also says facilities require attention. She says expanding staff and physical space is key to providing more rehabilitative programming for inmates. Reporters pressed Noem on why she supports action now when lawsuits and media reports have addressed these concerns for years. She says some of these complaints are new to her, and that's part of what prompted her action.
Now that we have this many different complaints that have been brought to my attention, we are looking at evaluating every single policy in DOC.
The governor says the review will be for all state prisons. Noem says she may share information from the full investigation, but will be restricted by personnel laws. For SDPB, I'm Ariel Zients in Rapid City.
A former South Dakota legislative leader from Rapid City has died suddenly. Republican David Lust is remembered by colleagues as a tough lawmaker who was involved for the right reasons. SDPB's Lee Strupinger reports.
David Lust was first elected to the state legislature in 2006. He worked his way up the caucus, becoming the majority leader in 2011 and holding the position for 4 years. When U.S. Representative Dusty Johnson was former Governor Dennis Dugard's chief of staff, he worked with Lust daily during legislative session. Johnson says Lust was a fierce leader for the House Republicans.
He was a guy who knew how to stand his ground. He was also a guy who understood that you don't measure success by how many fights you have. You measure success by how much better you make your state. And so he, unlike other politicians, David just never fought for the fun of fighting. He fought because the battles were important.
Lust returned to the state legislature in 2016 as a Dugard appointee, replacing late Representative Dan Dryden, who was posthumously reelected. Mark Mickelson was Speaker of the House during the years Lust returned to the legislature. He and Lust had several debates on the House floor. Mickelson says those debates were challenging and fun and intellectually stimulating.
It's just tremendously sad. Now my heart goes out to his family. He's a great man. He went way too young.
The Argus leader's reporting that Lust died of a suspected heart attack overnight on Friday. He was 53 years old. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Lee Strupinger in Rapid City.
There's plenty of political reasons for South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem to visit the National Guard troops she deployed to the U.S. border with Mexico. She says she's making the flight to McAllen, Texas, to check in on the roughly 50 National Guard members who volunteered for a 30-day deployment. The visit also gives the ambitious governor a chance to make hardline immigration measures a driving force of the Republican Party. Noem eagerly joined the political fight with President Joe Biden over a surge in border crossings and has even used the deployment to criticize potential rivals for the 2024 Republican nomination. A federal contempt of court trial involving three members of the U.S. Marshals Service has been moved from Aberdeen to Sioux Falls. Three supervisory marshals, including the agency's chief of staff, John Kilgallen, were accused of allowing a deputy marshal to leave the courthouse in Aberdeen with prisoners in tow on May 10th. That came after the marshals refused to tell the judge whether she had been vaccinated against COVID-19. The trial was originally set for September 13th in Aberdeen, but will now begin December 14th in Sioux Falls. U.S. District Judge Brian C. Buescher, who is presiding over the case, said Sioux Falls is a more convenient place for proceedings for all parties involved in the case. The body of a woman has been found in a submerged vehicle in an Aberdeen lake. Authorities say police were called Saturday about a suspicious object in Richmond Lake. Divers responded and found the submerged vehicle near the West Bridge. The vehicle was tied to a missing persons case from Aberdeen. Officials say the body is believed to be a woman reported missing by family members in April. The investigation is ongoing. Severe drought levels remain relatively stable despite recent rainfall across the state. Mike Gillespie is a hydrologist with the National Weather Service. He says drought conditions are causing record lows for groundwater.
The groundwater is getting used up. Soil moisture is way behind normal for most areas. So, water supply is going to start having issues if we continue to see these dry conditions going forward.
Gillespie says any rainfall the state receives will be beneficial for crops and bodies of water with current conditions. The Drought Monitor updates every Thursday and can be found at droughtmonitor.unl.edu. Much of the work at the Sanford Underground Research Facility is thousands of feet below the surface. But one of the latest projects is above ground, a garden honoring Native American history in the Black Hills. The garden will sit on top of a hillside in Lead, near the entrance to the facility. The location is important.
This is a homeland. They have been here for hundreds of years. The Black Hills has provided sustenance for all the tribes.
That's Casey Russell. He's the cultural and diversity coordinator for the facility. Sacred Circle Garden is the English translation of Shangleska Wukan. Russell says the finished project will feature native plants and a medicine wheel.
It has four colors in a circle, and it represents the four directions that Native Americans use for gardening and their migration back and forth.
The four directions point to significant nearby landmarks: Bear Butte, the Badlands, Devil's Tower, and Black Elk Peak. Russell hopes the garden sends a positive message.
The sacred circle, the circle of life, also tells us we're all connected in some way. Even the animals are connected to us.
The project is donor-funded, with about half of the $800,000 cost raised so far. The garden will include a walking path around the medicine wheel and benches for the public to sit. Final plans are still in development. Stacy Miller is the foundation director. She says the project has been a long time coming.
The site itself comes down to the three words on our webpage is protecting, respecting, and understanding.
The project will begin next spring or summer. The Sacred Circle Garden will host educational programs and be open to the public. Roughly 15% of Americans over 18 report some hearing loss. Over-the-counter hearing aids could soon be a solution for many South Dakotans. SDPB's Kyle Ireland has more.
Congress passed the Over-the-Counter Hearing Aid Act in 2017, but implementation was delayed because of the pandemic. Earlier this month, President Biden ordered the FDA to release guidelines and standards within the next 120 days. Over-the-counter hearing aids are meant for people with mild to moderate hearing loss. Dr. Jennifer Phelan is an audiologist at the University of South Dakota Speech and Hearing Clinic. She says a hearing evaluation isn't required, but is still recommended.
The hard part is, without a hearing evaluation, someone isn't going to know if that's them. And so without a hearing evaluation, people are going to end up going on the perception of how they feel like their hearing is.
Phelan says over-the-counter hearing aids provide opportunities for audiologists and other hearing healthcare professionals to make recommendations after their patient has had an evaluation.
I can talk to my patients and give them more options, and that really is where I see the biggest opportunity for us.
There are already personal sound amplification products sold. Phelan says the proposed federal rules and guidelines could help professionals and consumers make informed decisions.
Our goal with looking at the hearing aids is hopefully being able to say, these are products that are regulated. We trust them. This is going to help you.
The FDA guidelines are expected to be released by mid-November. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Kyle Ireland in Vermilion.
Students and professors from the South Dakota School of Mines are using an innovative technology for repairs on a B-1B bomber. They used cold spray technology on a broken hinge. It's a spray-on metal that adheres to a surface to form a mechanical bond. Brian James is a PhD student at the School of Mines and a chief engineer at Ellsworth Air Force Base. He says without cold spray technology, the repair would have cost around $500,000.
The total spray was about 6 hours long. We were able to restore that for less than $10,000.
James says the aircraft was fully restored and ready to fly in 24 hours. Normally, the repair would take 8 weeks. The School of Mines began researching cold spray technology 14 years ago. James says it has many potential applications.
The sky's the limit. We can repair all forms of metallic components. We can do non-metallic components also. So whether it's a militarized aircraft or commercial aircraft, we can redimensionalize and bring that part back to service.
James says the new technology will change the face of aircraft maintenance. For more information, go to sdsmt.edu. A new long-term study at South Dakota Mines is searching for ways to control erosion on slopes. Brett Lingwall is an associate professor of engineering at the university. He says drought conditions put a roadblock in their summer research plans.
Unfortunately, some of the technologies where we were looking to accelerate revegetation and hoping that the grasses and native plants that we were trying to work with would take hold, Mother Nature had other ideas.
The Living Laboratory is on a hillside on the mine's campus in Rapid City. It contains 20 plots for different experiments and trials. Students will collect and compile data over the next few years to determine the effectiveness of erosion control efforts. Lingwall says better erosion control could keep contaminants out of Rapid Creek and other waterways. The drought in South Dakota continues, and it's causing all kinds of issues across the state, including ranching. Eliza Blue and her husband Max are experiencing real-life problems on their ranch in Perkins County. They spoke to In the Moment's Lori Walsh.
Nearly 70% of South Dakota is experiencing severe drought conditions. Cattle sales are early, grass fires are common, and ranch families are stretching their resources and their resolve to endure harsh conditions. Eliza Blue and her husband ranch in Perkins County. Eliza joins us now with an update. Eliza, welcome back to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Lori.
Well, we've been following the drought monitor and giving the data, and I really want to know what it's like on the ground. So tell us a little bit about how you see the drought play out on your land.
Well, obviously this drought is very widespread, so we are no stranger to drought in western South Dakota. I mean, it's pretty much part of the life cycle of our ecosystem to go through periods of drought. And so, you know, most ranchers they have contingency plans and we know how to deal with it. It always is stressful though, because, you know, as you just mentioned, grass fires, that becomes way more of a concern. And this year we had two major wildfires in the winter, which that is actually very rare. just because there was no snow. So it's we were in drought even before, you know, the growing season began. So that has been really stressful. And for us, you know, in a day-to-day way, it means that a lot of things that we would normally be doing during the day, we just can't. So, for example, you can't drive your pickup across the pasture, or at least you have to be very careful. Any kind of vehicle out in the grass, because the smallest spark can create a grass fire. Mm. And similarly, I mean, most people aren't haying this year because there isn't any, there's just very little grass to hay. But the really limited places that you can hay, you also can't do that during the day. So you have to get up really early in the morning or stay up late at night to try to get any haying done, because again, you don't want equipment out in the hottest part of the day.
Yeah.
So the other big thing is basically, and actually I would say the main thing that's happening is that hay prices are just, they're the highest that I've ever seen. And my husband, who has been doing this his whole life, he says he's never seen anything like it, because it isn't just South Dakota, Montana, Wyoming. I mean, the drought is so big that for anybody who has hay, it's traveling so far to get to us. And the law of supply and demand is just that, you know, they can almost charge whatever they want.
Wow.
So that's really stressful, you know, going into winter, knowing that you aren't going to be able to feed your herd, and then, you know, having to make plans to sell off, you know, in some cases everything, but in almost every case, people are going to have to sell something, because there's just no way to make it through the winter with hay prices as they are.
Yeah. So when you're selling, who's buying?
Well, that's an interesting question, and that is part of the other hardship is that there's, you know, the market is set up such that we sell calves in the fall, and that's, you know, what people are used to buying, and so there's kind of a supply chain lined up for that. But when you have to sell, for example, if you're out of grass now and you have to sell like a mother and a baby, which we call pairs, mm-hmm. There isn't going to be a market for it anywhere around here, because all your neighbors are in the same boat. So much like the hay having to travel a long distance to us, it's the same with anything we sell is going to have to go where there's grass. There's just a, at this point, there's more supply than there is demand, so the prices for bred cows and for pairs will be lower than normal because, yeah, there's just not a market for it right now.
Yeah.
So that will continue, you know, into the fall.
Yeah. You talk about, you know, this drought is part of the ecosystem. It's something that you're still dealing with. You're also the author of a book called Accidental Rancher, and you're deeply concerned about the longevity of the grasslands and how we take care of them. How are you thinking about this drought and the future of your land as this all unfolds and you deal with the daily stresses, but you also have a mind toward the next generation?
Well, honestly, I freak out a lot. that was the way
fair
I was
enough.
Dealing with
yeah.
it. And, because yeah, there's a lot of variables, and like I said, a drought. It's not unprecedented, but a drought that is this widespread, and like I said too, that you know, even in the winter, starting in the winter, we were dealing with these dry conditions. That is really terrifying, and you know, there's. Rotational grazing is very promising, and there's a lot of ranchers that already do versions of this, but intensive rotational grazing is one way to help handle drought conditions. But there's only so much you can do. So because we just don't know. I mean, is this the new normal? And if it is, I mean, I think one thing that's going to have to happen is people will just have to run fewer cows on their acreage because the land just won't support more than that. And I mean, that's what we already do. It's just what we have come to expect as what we can, you know, the number of head per acres, that will just shift to be less. And, you know, people's budgets will shift accordingly because they won't be able to earn as much money from, you know, the same number of acres.
Right. And that goes into the diversification of your operation and all kinds of things. We hope to have you back on the program. I was thinking about you this weekend, Eliza, because tomorrow on In the Moment, we're going to talk more about history of the women of the West with an author named Winifred Gallagher. Her book is called New Women in the Old West, and it shares untold stories of the women who migrated with their husbands and by themselves, and how the unfenced ranges, hardships, and interactions with Native people changed the road to suffrage. Eliza Blue is a rancher and shepherdess in Perkins County, South Dakota. Her book is called Accidental Rancher, and more information is available at elizablue.net. Eliza, thanks for being here with us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Megan Feary. And that is your daily news update. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at SDPB News and visit sdpb.org/news to stay up to date on our journalism as it comes in. And as always, thank you for listening.